Welcome to the Inside Story podcast, where we dissect, analyze, and help define major global stories. I'm Hashim Ahlbarra. Sri Lanka has a long history of ethnic and religious tensions, and with a new plan, President Gotabaya Rajapaksa hopes to heal those divisions by carrying out a series of reforms. He's just appointed a task force to establish a blanket system for all communities. The so-called One Country, One Law concept aims to end discrimination across Sri Lanka. But the panel will be headed by a controversial Buddhist monk known for his anti-Muslim stance. He'll be leading a 13-member committee that includes four Muslim representatives, but no Tamils. Muslims make up almost 10% of Sri Lanka's 22 million people, who are predominantly Sinhalese Buddhists. Gotabaya was elected in 2019 with the backing of the Buddhist majority. Critics say the president promoted the plan during his presidential campaign to secure their support. Let's bring in our guests in Colombo, Bhavani Funeska, senior researcher at the Center for Policy Alternatives. In Nottingham, Tamil Anathavinayagan is lecturer in the International Human Rights Law at University of Nottingham. Also in Colombo, Shireen Abdesarur, who is also co-founder of Women's Action Network. Welcome to the program. Bhavani, let's talk about the One Country, One Law concept. Is it an attempt by the government, or by Rajapaksa in particular, to bring all the nation under one legal code, irrespective of their religious identities and ethnic affiliations?
Thank you for having me. So we realized a few hours ago that the government, the president, has issued a gazette appointing this presidential task force. And one looks at the mandate of the task force, and it's very clear. It's to take forward this policy of one country, one law. Now, there are a couple of issues one needs to factor in. This is not a new thing. We've heard this since 2019 with the election manifesto of Gotabaya Rajapaksa. And since he came into office as well, we've heard this continuous rhetoric of a one country, one law policy. So it's not new. What's new is that it's now being driven through this task force and this culture of task forces. That's one aspect. Mm-hmm. The other is the composition of the task force, which is headed by a very divisive Buddhist monk. There's a whole history to his background and what he has done in the past, but also very seriously, he's been convicted for contempt of court of the highest court in Sri Lanka. So there's a lot of issues around this. But fundamentally, the question is, why do we need this task force? And what's the purpose of this task force at this moment?
Okay.
And it looks to...
That's really the question that everyone is asking, Tamil.
Yeah.
Why would you need this particular law now when you have a diverse nation such as Sri Lanka?
Thank you very much, Hassan, and I'm very pleased to be here as well. I mean, to echo what Bhavani just said, the point is that Rajapaksa and his family ran on this very electoral base, and they are just giving back what the electoral base wants, namely to establish a Sinhalese legal hegemony in the country, in an atmosphere of majoritarianism that is deeply entrenched in Sri Lanka for decades. And it's interesting enough that they are using and doing it now when they are at the very crossfire with the United Nations. Please consider and be aware that Sri Lanka has a vibrant interaction with the United Nations human rights machinery. And the United Nations had, on different occasions in 2014 and 2017, before the UN human rights treaty bodies, asked to either amend or repeal personal laws like the Disavamale law, the Tamil personal laws, but also the Muslim laws. The interesting thing now is that international human rights law is rather used as a Trojan horse to introduce Sinhalese legal hegemony that is now playing and panders towards the electoral base in the country.
Mm-hmm. Shireen, usually when you want to sell a law to the people, or when you want to win the hearts and mind, you bring about someone who can build bridges. The choice of Gal Gadot Nyanansera has been absolutely controversial from day one. Why do you think the Rajapaksa is putting the monk to lead this committee?
Because I think Rajapaksa's politics is now, it's about provoking anti-Muslim sentiment. And that is the only way forward for them to continue with this country. Right now, country is almost collapsing with regard to economy. The constituency that elected Rajapaksa based on the singular Buddhist ideology that they talked about, because the slogan of one country, one law is Rajapaksa campaign. So the president is becoming very unpopular. In the context of that, we see that this is all about anti-Muslim rhetoric again. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bhavani, when you look at the supporters of the new panel, they will tell you that basically you have personal laws which are discriminating against women in Sri Lanka, failing to address domestic violence against women or the issue of forced marriages. And therefore, it's about time to have one legal code that will be the fundamental law in Sri Lanka. And for this particular reason, what Rajapaksa is doing is genuine and justified.
Well, I think the question to ask is, why is it being done by a task force? And I think for those who are not aware of it, there are several committees set up by the Minister for Justice. The Minister of Justice has several committees looking at law reform. And the lawmaking process, there's a particular system, a structure in Sri Lanka. So are we now saying a task force headed by a Buddhist monk is the best way forward in terms of law reform in Sri Lanka? Any law reform, not just about gender, but any laws should be drafted by a task force and headed by someone who has no legal background. Now, I think that's one question to ask. The other one is, we also have experts that have been looking at MMDA and other issues, and there are reports. So what is this new initiative going to add to it? So there are a lot of questions, I would say, as a lawyer, mm-hmm. I have in terms of a task force being given this mandate. And I think that that's something that really needs to be questioned.
Tamil, you have the issue of universal human rights at the same time, and you have cultural relativism. Minorities, particularly the Tamils and the Muslims, are saying that this government has to understand that our culture is to be respected. The government is saying that we adhere to an international order that is more in favour of implementing universal human rights. How do you respond to this?
Well, Hashan, thank you very much for this question. I mean, to echo Bhavani as well here again and unravel this a little bit further, the point of the matter is Sri Lanka is a post-colonial country, and it has inherited many of the malaise that the country had inherited from the British colonizers and the Portuguese and the Dutch. So there is an amalgam of cultures, religion, traditions in the country existent. But using this argument of now universalizing human rights, something that Sri Lanka or the Sri Lankan lawmakers have always opposed, now using it for their own purpose to further rather legal hegemony and completely marginalizing and liquidating the identities of a multicultural country is completely contrary to the point. I'm coming from a scholarship which is called the Third World Approaches to International Law, and we have to consider the manifold narratives that are existent in the country rather than abolishing them. And that is the purpose right now of this task force. It's entrenching legal hegemony, cultural hegemony, but also further expanding the presidency of Rajapaksa. And that is a great threat. And being someone who is ethnically Tamil, mm-hmm. we don't see any Tamil representation as well on the task force. As usual, these task forces are running on the concept of representation of the majority with some token representatives from the minorities. This is the usual tactic that has been employed in post-colonial Sri Lanka.
Shireen, the general sentiment among Muslims is that this is an attempt to implement a Buddhist supremacist rule in Sri Lanka. What would be next move for the Muslim community in Sri Lanka?
It's very difficult because it's coming at a time, as you pointed out, this Muslim personal law reform has been discussed, and the women for the last 40 years have been fighting for this reform. And it's also very interestingly, this particular committee can also look at the draft laws act that have been drafted and some of the amendments that are being done by the Justice Ministry. So it's very tough for many of us who have been fighting for women's rights, children's rights in this country, equality before law and all, and where this convicted extremist criminal has been brought in as the head of the committee. And it's very difficult to challenge this also to moving forward, because the president has appointed this task force, many other task force also he has appointed, because the 20th Amendment gives him that power. And I don't know whether we'll be able to go to Supreme Court on the gazette itself, but when the committee, this particular committee, suggests thing, maybe probably we will be able to challenge those things. And I'm also thinking that this is not only the Muslim personal law reform per se, but also there are other things that are on the chopping board of madrasa, abolishing madrasas, banning burqas, halal food, and then scrutiny of Arabic script, and also Arabic translation, and more recently ban of cow slaughtering. All these things, and also radicalization, that came as a gasset again, which we challenged it. And probably there is a possibility of them bringing in de-radicalization process also into this particular committee. So it's very complex, and we need to legally move, challenge this whatever possible way. At the same time, we have the Muslim MPs who have crossed over and given Rajapaksha this 20th Amendment, mm-hmm. the power that he is abusing now against Muslims. So it is those Muslim MPs who crossed over has to look into this very clearly.
Bhavani, is it the Buddhist nationalist sentiment which has paved the way to these drastic changes that we're seeing in the society? Or was it the 2019 attacks that was the moment for Rajapaksa to say, it's my moment to implement the reforms or the policies I would like to implement?
So I think it's very important to look at our recent history. The Easter Sunday attacks is, I think, what everyone is aware of in 2019. But the attacks against the Muslim community goes back years, in a way, decades. But the more recent attacks in the post-war period, actually, you've seen attacks in 2014, 2018, specific incidents where one particular Buddhist monk is linked to these incidents. Now, if you look at that incident and the individual, that particular individual now is heading a task force. So there is a particular culture that has been built, an impunity that one individual enjoys under the Rajapaksa regime. Now, this task force merely legitimizes his role, the impunity he enjoys, but also sends a message to the minorities in this country that they are second-class citizens, that the majority community, and particularly Buddhist monks who are known and there's evidence of incitement, can get away with so much. Not just that, not just the incitement and the racism. Mm-hmm. This is an individual who's been convicted for contempt of court. So by appointing him to this particular task force, the president is sending a direct message that he doesn't care about the judicial process. He doesn't care about the lawmaking process. So it has huge implications as to what the president has done. He may have issued just a gazette, but the implications mm-hmm. are long-term and can set Sri Lanka back in so many ways. And that needs to be recognized and taken on. And Shireen's point about challenge, that's an important point.
Tamil, the international community has been very critical of the atrocities committed against the Tamil, to the point where they were asking for the government to take concrete steps to reach out to the Tamil and to heal the wounds of the civil war. Now, by excluding a Tamil or Tamils from this task force. Is the government, or is Rajapaksa inciting ethnic, religious animosities once again?
Indeed. I mean, the current president was spearheading. He was the architect of the end of the war, of the civil war that lasted for 26 years in 2009. Not including now the Tamils, although the Rajapaksa family is making so-called efforts by speaking Tamil in public or pretending to care for the Tamil issues on various fronts. The non-nomination of a Tamil to this task force, which is just only circumventing the usual legal process, is just undercutting and undermining any credibility in his presidency from the perspective of the Tamils. Mm-hmm. But also, as we have pointed out, Ñana Siratero is spearheading anti-Muslim hate, but also anti-Tamil hate in the country. And this very task force is the symbol of division. Mm-hmm. It is just stipulating a new legal empire that favors the majority and that just sidelines the minorities in the country and is not leading any way to real reconciliation. The United Nations and the international organizations mm-hmm. have tried to strive for reconciliation on many occasions. I don't want to go into the details of such, mm-hmm. but the failure is evident. We don't see reconciliation. Non-nomination of a Tamil is evidence.
Shireen, since 2019, these are some of the decisions made by the president and which were widely seen as anti-Muslims, particularly the ban on burqa, ban on madrasas, imposing mandatory cremation policy for the COVID-19 dead and refusing to allow Muslims to bury their dead according to their religion. Is this interpreted by Muslims as an indication that the government, or Rajapaksa in particular, is adamant in his anti-Muslim stance?
Definitely. I mean, we are made to feel that we are no more citizen of this country. It's a form of, minority communities in this country feel that they are third-grade citizens, and we have to stomach what the majority Sinhala Buddhism say to us. If we don't, we have to get out. So the whole one country, one law is all about, it's a Buddhist state. This is what President said in his inaugural mm-hmm. speech. This is a Buddhist state, that I am a president elected by Sinhala Buddhist, and I will serve them, but I will look after the minority as well. So this is very clearly indicated in his inaugural speech. He is implementing that ever since he took over the office. And also very interestingly, all these task force that he has been appointing, either military men or the clergymen, and also the women's representation is missing. President mm-hmm. not only is intimidating the minority, but also the country's women are left out in any of the legislative process or being part of whatever the consultation that he has been doing. So it's also very interesting, because at a time when women from various minority communities have been also in the forefront articulating for various reforms, and the president come up with this task force with conservative men, criminals, and also the military men. And also in this particular task force, we don't know who these Muslims are also. It can be one section of the Muslim community. This also can divide the Muslim community into pieces, because if president is giving only one section of the Muslim community, one sect, and the other rest of the community is being vilified in the name of following Wahhabism or various conservative thing, it's very problematic. Because not too long ago, Ñanasara Mong told in the public media that it is Allah who is the reason why terrorism is happening all over the world. In that context...
Unfortunately, we're running out of time. Shireen Abdul Sarur, Tamil Vinton, Anata Vinayagan, and Bhavani Funiska, really appreciate your insight. Thank you. That's it for the Inside Story podcast. This episode was produced by Damien Lay, Maha Barada, and Abdurrahman Warsam. Studio sound was by Chris Langmore. The program was edited by Anirban Sarkar, Lin Gwen, and Joe DeFrias. Be sure to subscribe to the Inside Story podcast to catch every episode. Thank you for listening. We'll be back again on Thursday.